Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope. All right, we are on episode number 31 of the Glum Lot Podcast. I'm Mark, and I'm here with my friend, Brad.
Hello.
Hello. Hola.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Yes.
Said, I think.
And so we want to remind our listeners to join our Facebook group, the Glum Lot Podcast Facebook group.
Please.
Believe it or not, that's on Facebook. And also, if you want to email us your thoughts at theglumlotpodcast@gmail.com, that would be very kind of you.
We love getting mail.
It makes us think that we're important.
Yes.
And so what's on your mind today, Brett?
So you've heard the term pink cloud?
Ah, yes, the old pink cloud.
Yeah, I never heard that.
I never heard it before
ever,
AA.
Ever. Like, what is a pink cloud, you know?
And yeah.
I was on the pink cloud when I first came in because basically what the pink cloud is we start to get sober and we get this feeling of euphoria almost. Mm-hmm. Not everybody. I know I did.
I did a little bit too.
Yep. And I was just so proud of myself and I thought I knew the program, right? And new people were coming in and I'd say, oh, I'm sober. For a week.
You know what my experience with it was? I wanted to tell everybody about it.
Yeah.
I was going to run up to people I didn't even know and go, you're not going to believe this shit.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't have to drink. And if you don't and you do this stuff, you feel really good.
And
you,
hang around me. Yeah. I'll show you.
And these people have great stories and they're funny. And so
there's this guy in the room. Every time I walked in, he'd say, still on the pink cloud, are you? That's good.
Well, you know, it's that sense of newfound freedom and hope that you haven't had for maybe decades.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, boom.
So there I am sitting crisscross applesauce on the pink cloud, my belly hanging out, all happy.
Looking like a Buddha.
Buddha. Yep. But all of a sudden, a strange wind comes around, and it wasn't for me.
I can see the dark clouds.
Yeah, and the storm blew in, and, you know, that is what we call life. And, you know,
they say life gets lifey.
Yeah, life gets lifey for sure, and it swept the clouds right underneath me. And, you know, I learned very quickly that, yes, I was sober, but there is work to be done.
Ah, yes.
So when the weather comes, I am going to be okay and hopefully get popped back up on the pink cloud.
I had the same experience as you, but in a slightly different way. And I've talked about this before, is that I put the drink down and I got that feeling of, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And look at me. It's like when you first learn to ride a bike. You're like, I'm riding a bike, bitch.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
And so, you know, what happened with me is, like you say, life crept back in, and I just, when we were just having talking to our last guest, I told this little story, but somebody asked me how sobriety was, and I'm like, it would be great if it wasn't for these feelings.
Oh, yeah.
And so, exactly like you, there was work to be done.
Oh, yeah, and so, I fell hard because, you know, those feelings, I feel hard.
Yeah.
And it just got me, but at the same time, you know, I stayed and listened. Thank goodness. You know, I was done with all that crap, and I just had to stay and listen. I was willing to listen, and, you know, we can get back on the pink cloud again.
Yep, and there's something better than the pink cloud.
Oh, yeah. It's called serenity.
It is, and that's the serenity that hopefully if we've worked our program and we've done some service and all the things that everybody always talks about, we're going to get there.
Yeah.
And our life's going to be better beyond our wildest dreams. But until then, you know, enjoy your pink cloud.
That's right.
Just know this, it's really not the way it is forever.
Yeah, don't get used to being perched up on that thing.
And so with that, we have a guest who I don't really know very well. You don't know very well.
I know
this is
not.
Be good conversation. He's a young guy.
We're getting more and more of those.
Yeah,
know,
that's good. We need, you know, we're getting a lot more young people, too, and that's great because we need them. And I know this guy's heavily involved in service work, and I want to make sure I talk to him about that, too, because he does have a lot of experience with it. So let's welcome Topher.
Topher!
Topher, welcome to the Glumlaw Podcast.
How you doing?
Good. We're glad to have you here. Let's start with your sobriety date.
Of course. My name is Topher. My sobriety date is March 5th, 2019.
Okay.
Nice.
And so we usually like to start with the person's first experience with the effect of alcohol, usually when they're a kid or a teen
feel
or whatever.
Like, you know.
Yeah, whatever. Whenever you tell us about yours.
Yeah. My first experience, well, my first memory of getting drunk was in my parents' garage. I remember that's where they stored the 30 racks of Budweiser.
Nice.
All right. Yeah, I had my buddy over, and I was like, "Hey, my parents are upstairs. Let's close the door. Keep watch out." You know, over in the garage.
Them.
No, not at all. Right.
How old were you?
Ooh, I think I was probably 11.
Yeah.
Probably 10 or 11.
Okay.
I had had sips before that. You know, like New Year's Eve, mom would pass me a Smirnoff or ice. You know, something
ooh,
real.
Smirnoff
yeah,
ice.
Something
we haven't
real.
Had that one
yeah,
on
we've
yet.
We've had wine coolers.
Barbers
yeah. Slip me a Zima.
Ice. Ooh, yeah.
So the real tasty, fancy
Kool-Aid,
drinks.
Kool-Aid, basically.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right?
But this was Budweiser.
Yeah, so and I remember I hated the taste of it.
Yeah.
I thought beer was disgusting.
Yeah, yeah,
and, you know, of course, I had to plug my nose and down like four of them my first time.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Doesn't stop us.
Exactly, it doesn't.
So you felt the buzz, though.
Oh, yeah. That was my first, feeling of, really buzzed.
Did you like it?
Oh, of course I did.
Yeah. Fall in love with it?
It has been my romancer since who knows how long.
Since that day.
Since that day. But really, the first time I remember getting blasted was at a country party in my hometown. And I remember
What is a country party?
Like country music?
No, more like, out in the farmland with a big bonfire.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a field party.
A field party, yeah.
Like they do it in the country.
Yeah, definitely suburb, like half city, half country.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's, best of both worlds.
Yeah,
at these
you moved
parties.
Out to the country part for this party.
Yeah, because you'd have the country boys that thought they were gangster. So
yeah,
that's the
funny part. Right.
But I remember walking home and just getting back to the house and then just nothing.
Blackout.
Absolutely nothing.
Hit yourself a good blackout.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. How old were you?
14, I think.
Okay.
15.
Shit.
But I didn't really get into it really until college.
Yeah.
There was a little here and a little there. I
just
tried
normal
my first
high
weed.
School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But school was fine, got through it just fine.
I mean, other than the usual BS of thinking I was a loner, thinking that nobody liked me, all that bullying. BS that is
drinking solved that a little bit.
Oh yeah, it definitely did. But I think that drinking solved that when I got into college and realized, I can be Mr. Cool, I can be Mr. Popular if I had a couple drinks in me, but more just, didn't give a crap as much about what other people thought and I could make a fool of myself.
Yes, you're like, if my standards get low enough, I'll be really cool.
That's so true.
Yeah, I
can meet that low bar.
Oh yeah, it was already low. It's just there was no standards after I had a couple in me. So
your drinking ramps up, and you have freedom, You got nobody looking over your shoulders, no accountability. You do what you got to do, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did it affect your school at all?
I believe so, considering I dropped out. let's see. It was my first year at MV. I ended up dropping out because I stopped going to classes. And then I ended up coming out and going to college out here. And that community college, I dropped out because my parents told me, go to rehab or we're going to stop paying for everything.
How did this come about? That's a really interesting turn of events. So you're in college and you're are you doing any drugs too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, everything? Big
oh, yeah. Yeah, I was known as the drug guy.
It was centered around booze?
It was definitely centered around the idea of just numbing out.
Okay.
So if you had it, I was doing it.
And so your parents saw this in you.
Oh, yeah. I was 16 years. When I was 16, my mom said that she realized I was an alcoholic. Her father was an alcoholic.
Okay.
She took care of her sisters, and her mother did her best. But I remember I was trying to sneak some of her wine cooler out of the fridge, and I remember closing the refrigerator door, and she's standing there.
And you're like, "What's up?"
Yeah, no, I was like, "I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not guilty at all." In my face.
Oh, this has got alcohol in it.
And she looked at me and she said, "Why do you need this?" Because I remember I was like at that point like starting to break down a little bit, and I said, "Because I just don't want to feel this way anymore. It helps me not feel this way anymore."
Yeah, you know, you were fucking spot on.
Oh, yeah. I
now, meanwhile, mom and dad are both drinkers?
No, dad was not a big drinker. Mom drank.
She wasn't.
Dad had like a glass of Bailey's on occasion.
Wow. Yeah. How does he do that?
Right? I remember I loved Bailey's. I would take the things to the face.
Drink a bottle of it.
Oh, of course,
God,
right?
Mix it with some chocolate syrup and Godiva.
Anyway. No, mix it with some vodka.
Take a little bit of coffee, man. That's like, you know, the old person's Four Loko back when they had caffeine.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
But yeah, so I had told her, you know, like, I just don't want to feel this way anymore. I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling inside. I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel like anything was right.
You weren't comfortable in your own skin.
Exactly, exactly. And when I drank, I was comfortable.
Your brothers
had the
or sisters?
Same experience as you.
I
same
did.
Exactly.
I had an older sister who, of course, like 5 years older sister, and didn't want anything to do with me either. So, you know, it was a very at-home life was... I was expected to be this certain person. I was expected to be Mr. Gentleman Manners, you know, part my hair and tuck in my shirt before I go to school because my parents were old enough to be my grandparents. Ah. And I would make it to school and I didn't fit in there either. So it was just like anywhere I went, I didn't fit in, no matter what I was doing. So it really helped me just, it allowed me to feel normal for the first time.
So, yeah, I had the same exact experience with thinking, this is why people drink.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. I'm going to live the rest of my life like this.
Yeah. For the first time, I felt just calm.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like I was like just this oddity, whether it's at school or with my family, or it's like wasn't living up to everything what everyone else expected me to be. I was just normal.
You know, what you're talking about, it, for me, and I think for a lot of people, is a very profound experience.
Huh.
Because we feel we have found the answer, you know? And then we're like, I wonder if it'll work again. And you do it again, and I'm like, oh, my God, it works.
Mm-hmm.
And
people
so then you're like—
me too, you know?
Oh, yeah, that was the best part.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so I became a maintenance drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And I did my share of blacking out and over-drinking, but for the most part, I maintained.
Maintaining for me was a lot of booze.
Yeah. Well, mine, you know, obviously it's progressive disease. Mine got way the heck out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember the exact thing that you're talking about and just feeling that warmth spread and my nerve endings just all relaxing and all the tension leaving and me starting to feel that euphoric, I wouldn't even call it really euphoric, just feeling the absence of anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. And
you know,
I'm a very
which
anxious
to me was
person.
Euphoric.
Exactly. Like the what I thought was serenity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah,
what I thought was, you know, peace for the first time in my life.
Yeah. Isn't that, you know, and normal people, they don't process it like that.
No, after two, they start to feel queasy and say, that's enough.
Right. After 2 weeks, I wonder what three would do.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyways, you're in college and you're clearly, at least in your parents' eyes, you're out of control.
Probably in a lot more than just my parents' eyes. I remember I was living in a private dormitory down the street from the college where the landlord didn't really monitor us at all. It was 5 guys and 9 girls in this giant house. And there was messed up Monday, twisted Tuesday, wasted Wednesday, thirsty Thursday, effed up Friday, shitty Saturday. And Sunday was recovery day where we all still drank. So it was just a whole
what
bunch of fun.
What were you majoring in again?
At the time, I was a vocal major, a music major.
Yeah, okay, so. I know. I was the same thing.
Yeah.
Only I was instrument, but I know the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was the guy that would always have his guitar with him when we were at the party. You know?
Those were great times.
Oh, yeah, right?
Anyway.
Dude, play a song,
total cliche, right?
No, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not drunk with a guitar saying, look at me, thinking I'm cool, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because people were telling you were.
All right.
Don't play something, dude.
Yeah, right,
Freebird.
Exactly. Best I remember them screaming that at me.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I'll do one better. Here's Stairway to Heaven.
So your parents sit you down. Is it like an intervention type thing or they just kind of put it out there?
I believe it was, well, I got into my first like real abusive relationship, and my grades started just, I just stopped going to school at one point. And I think it was due to a DWI or a weed charge. That I had gotten, and that I had to bring to their attention. And at this point, they knew I was drinking every day. Every time I talked to them, it was always, you know, something's the matter. My mom knew when I was 16 that, you know, there was going to be an issue. So they told me, you got to go to outpatient, and if you don't go, and now they had me traveling an hour back home.
To go to outpatient?
To go to outpatient each week. And then back, and I thought that this was, like, the biggest, like mistake in the world. Like, what are you guys doing? I don't give a crap what it is that you say. I'm going to still do what I want to do because you're not going to tell me what to do. I'm on my own.
Well, you've got you for an hour drive there, an hour at that, and then an hour drive back. So there's 3 hours you won't be doing it.
Exactly. Oh, no. It's
about the way home.
We'll say sure. I definitely remember all of my time back when I was younger. There was nothing that stopped me.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing stopped me.
Did outpatient have any effect on you?
No.
Did you know you had a problem?
I knew that, I thought the problem was that I didn't know how to drink like a normal person.
Okay. Well, that's true.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
And that I wanted someone to teach me how to do that.
Ah.
Yeah. I remember going to my, first meeting and I was cocky enough to bring up a topic. And the
top, your first meeting?
Yeah, my first
Damn.
Meeting.
Shit,
I sat down and they're like, so we have any topics? So I was like, how do you drink like a normal person? Thinking to so myself that everyone's
the wrong
sitting there.
I could not be there.
I want to learn how to drink every other weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
And their faces were?
It was just laughing at me, dude. They were just like geeking about my like what my topic was. And the entire hour was them telling me how they couldn't.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there with a coffee mug full of alcohol.
Thinking at the meeting?
At the meeting. Thinking that they had
People
no
knew.
Idea.
People
oh,
knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The my first couple of encounters with AA, I probably have some amends to make.
Well, I've been in meetings where people were drunk or high or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not uncommon.
Yeah.
But bringing booze to it, I got a friend who used to go to meetings and he would go into the bathroom and do heroin and come out and deliver a sparkling message, you know? But yeah. And then, you know, I've had people I sponsor come to meetings and you can smell booze on them. You go, dude, you've been drinking? No.
Yeah,
like,
of course
I can
not.
Fucking smell it. And like, that's not booze. It's my cologne. I'm like, fuck you, man. Is your cologne like Fleischmann's gin?
Oh, no, that was from like 4 days
him.
Ago. I've been 4 days without it, and that was 4 days ago.
Yeah,
sure it is.
So anyways, you go to this outpatient. You don't really think you got a big problem.
Yeah, no.
You know you're probably an alcoholic at this point?
I know that I have tried to drink normally, and I can't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not blaming alcohol for all the BS in my life.
Well, how did you know you couldn't drink right?
Because I, at some point, had realized, okay, I'm starting to flunk out of school. I'm starting to piss off my parents. I just want to get my parents off my back. I want to, you know, like, actually graduate. And I was like, well, you know, maybe it's this house that I'm living in, you know, that's making it hard for me to not drink every single day.
But
maybe
you would start off with all the right intentions of only having maybe a couple because you wanted to drink like a normal person.
Oh, yeah,
and
exactly.
That didn't work?
No, it never worked.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Not once.
No.
Yep.
Not a single time.
I know how that goes.
Yep.
Before I got sober, I think I had been drinking every day since I was at least 19 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm talking not a day went by that I did not
even
drink.
You know, even when I was sick, I drank.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember going to the hospital because of second-degree frostbite that I got because of a blackout. And as soon as I left this hospital...
God, I need a drink.
I went and got a Four
it'll,
Loko.
It'll warm me up.
Exactly,
yeah,
right?
Warm me up. Sure.
Oh, man. The amount of war stories I have where I think back and I'm
We're
thinking
good
to myself...
We're another one if you got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Bring it on.
Well, the one that I was just talking about, I remember I left my cigarettes at a bar in the Irish part of the city, and I was probably like 10 blocks away. Now, it was not the normal bar that I would have been at, and it was 2017 St. Paddy's Day during a huge blizzard, just busted out the back window of my car earlier that evening. My first thought of was, let's go to the bars instead of, you know, doing what we're doing here. So I go, and I start walking. You know, I get back. I'm blackout. From the bars. I left the car there with my cigarettes there. And
so you're
I thought
about a $10 pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, a $10 pack.
And you go talk 10 blocks to get that.
Exactly. And now the gas station to get a new pack was a half a block away.
Yeah.
So instead, I start walking 10 blocks to the wrong bar in the middle of this blizzard. I lost my boot in a snowbank. Really nice pair of Timmies, too. Mm. Continue walking.
Tim's.
Yeah. You know, if you're not from, you know, New York or like this area, then you don't like hear Tim's and you're like, what is that?
Timberland boots.
Yeah. Timberland boots. Lost that in the snowbank, kept going. Get to the wrong bar, and I'm like, oh, yeah, we went to the other bar. So I walk 7 blocks towards the next bar.
With one boot.
With one boot, getting a soaking wet sock. Get there with a busted-out window in the back of my car, sit down, spark up a cigarette, and then pass out for 3.5 hours in the middle of a blizzard with a wet sock on.
And all those people just left you alone there. Yeah, of course.
Yep.
Great friends.
My girlfriend at the time showed up and put me in the car, non-responsive practically. And I wake up the next morning screaming in pain with second-degree frostbite. The doctor tells me either we cut off half of your foot or you're going to have chronic pain for the rest of your life. Mm. And I said, these are my dancing feet. What do you mean? You're not cutting off this foot. You know, I got to boogie with this. So I leave the hospital. I say, screw you to the doctor, and I go and get drunk.
Do you still have pain in that foot today?
There's definitely...
It's funky?
Yeah. It's funky.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
I got a funky foot.
They're pitch black.
I step on it weird, you know?
Yeah. I got the Jimmy legs. So, okay, so obviously outpatient is having no effect on you. You're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
You continue drinking. It's a progressive disease. Tell us about the progression.
The progression. It didn't stop. I mean, like, it got to the point where, like, I wanted to because I realized how much of my life I was screwing up. The woman that I thought was going to be my forever woman, she was just done with me. Chaotic, abusive relationships that I thought were like, oh, well, woe is me. Like, how could this happen to me? And, you know, having children with, people that weren't my forever woman, that I love my children to death.
Of course.
And, it's hard times. And at first I thought I had nothing to do with the chaos and the abusiveness that we
just
shared.
Circumstances.
Exactly. It was just like, oh, you know, I just always get the crap end of the stick. And I started seeing too many patterns. And when my girlfriend at the time had told me, like, either you stop or we're done, that's when I first started to legitimately try and stop. And it was amazing when she would get up to go to work and I would watch her leave the driveway just to then scrounge for change to walk to the gas station. I tell people it was like a civil war in my head, where it was me fighting myself on, should I turn around? You can just wait till noon, then go get your drink, you know, but still continuously walking to the gas station.
Right.
And then finally halfway there, I'd give up and I just, you know, 10 a.m. in the morning, go and get my drinks. And by the way, not even on my dime, you know, telling my parents, oh, I need $40 for gas.
Oh, my God.
And then the next day, hey, Mom, Dad, I need $40 for gas. You went through an entire tank of gas in one day?
Oh,
it's like, oh,
God,
no,
yes.
I needed to go get toothpaste and milk. Don't forget about the toilet paper that I needed. That's why I spent it on. You know, I need gas this time.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't know what I was doing. They
masters, aren't we?
Yeah, right?
Masters
so good.
Of that shit.
So good.
Unmanageable at this point.
Yes. And I had gotten pulled over with the little one in the car and made the biggest mistake of my life. When I finally, it was life slapping me in the face. Everything was burning down around me. And I said to myself, it's time.
That had to be such a moment.
Yeah, I had to hit rock bottom so hard that I bashed my nose in. You know, they put me in a jail cell for 72 hours where there wasn't any room at the adult side. And because I had the kid in the car, like, it had to be isolation. And, like, it felt like solitary confinement for 3 days straight. And I was scared out of my mind. Mm. Jail is not the place for me. 1,000% just is not. So I got out of that holding cell on bail, and what's the first thing I do?
Go and get a drink.
Go and get a drink.
Jesus.
Yep. First thing I do is go and get a drink, and I remember—
How could you?
Yeah, right? 2 days later, I finally call my mom up crying drunk, and I'm saying to her, I need help. And they throw me into rehab.
Inpatient this time.
Inpatient, yeah. Yes. Yeah. A 30-day program, which I graduated. That's where my journey began.
So what happens in rehab to you? Now, at this point, you're ready to get help.
Yeah.
Obviously. You get there, they detox you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get out and you start going to these little programs that they have where they try to get you to figure out.
2 years of outpatient, yeah.
Yeah. So what happens in there for you?
one thing that happened was the recognition that God hadn't abandoned me.
Huh.
I always believed in God. I grew up a very Catholic family. Mom was Jesus this, Jesus that, with every single solution to my issues. But the real problem was that I had a resentment against God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that I didn't believe in him. I just thought that I was the butt end of every joke. And when someone told me that my God didn't have to be my mother's God and that I just needed a God,
yeah,
allowed the doors to open for discovery. For what is God to me? Like, who is this higher being? Which really allowed me to put aside all the hate that I held and start a discovery path.
That is really one of the genius parts of AA, is that they open that up for everybody as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone can be comfortable.
Exactly.
Everyone can find their own way.
Yeah.
And that is part of the inclusion that makes AA can work for anyone.
Exactly.
You know? And I know a lot of people have a problem with step three, step two and three when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stick around long enough, they usually figure out that the only problem I have with this is the problem I'm making, you know? And I just need to get out of the way and experience this and not try to figure it out, not try to label it.
Yeah, but especially in the rooms, we tend to throw those right at them right away as well.
And yeah, so, it does freak people out.
Yeah. Well,
I think that with step three, my biggest problem was that I was fearful that this wasn't what, you know, I wanted. You know, I was fearful that what God wanted for me wasn't what I wanted for me.
Well, yeah.
And that's probably true.
Yeah. I grew up with a mother that told me, you're going to be a priest. I can tell. This is God's path for you. So, you know, like, I always thought, a priest? Oh, okay. I don't know if I want that. Like, I don't know if I want to give God my will.
Although there are a lot of priests in our program.
Yeah, there definitely is.
It's not uncommon.
It's just the way that, you know, my own personal path
is going. Yeah. So,
I wonder why she said that.
I don't know.
Because I got told that, too.
Did you?
I did, but not a priest. But from my first girlfriend's mom said, I can just tell that's going to be you someday. You're going to be helping people.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was wondering, because now I could go right back to her, and unfortunately I can't. She died a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. But I could go back to her and tell her I'm doing just that.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
And that's why I was just curious. I wonder if she just saw something in you.
Maybe.
Yeah, just curious.
Yeah. I don't know. But what I do know is that my path going forward from that third was a lot easier when I started learning how to trust my higher power and having that communication. And you can't have trust with a higher power, in my opinion, or anyone in general, until you get to know them, until you can start to understand.
It took some time.
Exactly.
Understand.
And so you set yourself up with a good two and three to have a good four and five.
I sat on four for a very long time.
Did you?
I went shopping for a bit.
Okay.
I went for a while without a sponsor, which I do not recommend. Mm-hmm. And I was going to meetings. I was higher power, you know, exactly everything, but, you know, doing the rest of the steps. And I went 4 years without doing my fourth. And I finally found someone that was going to kick my butt into gear and sit down with me and say, listen, this is what we're doing. You're doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you have to write it in next to me. You know, I'll give you some time to write in. And I didn't want to be embarrassed by having to sit down next to my sponsor and write. So he actually like kind of made me feel like I had to do this, which was something I needed, because none of my other sponsors kind of were like pushing me, you know, and I needed that push.
Yeah, it was hard for me, too, because I had a very similar experience with having to be a certain way, proper. And, you know, it was going to be something that was going to be very improper that I was going to be sharing. And so that went against every fiber in me.
It is daunting for many people.
Four or five.
And then once you do it, it's like, no, that was great.
What was I so scared of? Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So ended up getting, I think was, he gave me like 2.5 weeks.
Wow. Yeah.
3 weeks to do my fourth. Sat down, did the fifth, sixth, seventh, and we're, you know, right on. We already had the list of people I'd harmed. And I've been working on my ninth.
Nice.
You know, making amends when my higher power puts them in my path when the time's right. And for the ones that I could right off the bat, I ended up doing so. It's funny, I actually did my first amends when I was still in rehab, inpatient, to my mother. and not understanding what an amends really was.
Right.
And she looked me in the eyes and told me, you gave me back my son.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is the only thing that you can do. Because I was like, what can I do to make up for it? What can I do to show you how I'm
and
sorry?
And everybody says the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Just do what you're doing.
Exactly.
Don't stop.
Exactly.
That's all we're asking, you know?
We don't understand it, I don't think, until we're living it.
Yeah, you know, experiencing it, yeah.
Yeah, and then we can, you know, say it to someone else because we can see other people that are new in the program going through similar things.
So your life changes.
Yeah.
It gets more serene.
Mm-hmm.
It gets easier.
I chase serenity instead of chaos for the first time in my life.
Nice.
It gets, you know, it gets clean. And I know you've worked with other people, and I know you're very big into service work. And just, I mean, since the listener can't see, Topher is quite a bit younger than Brett and I. And I know
quite a bit. Though?
Well, he's quite a bit younger than me. I can tell you
thank
that.
You.
And you're younger than me. So as the old guy in the room, I will say that I've heard from people that come in that are young that, you know, they'll say, oh, I walked into the room as a bunch of old guys.
Well, I mean, I listened to Blink 182 when I was in high school. What did you guys listen to?
I listened to Blink 182 when you were in high school.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
But when I was growing up, it was Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, there we go.
Candlebox, all those.
Rolling Stones. Yeah, that was after. Candlebox is after.
I listened to those guys too.
I had
like the
60s and 70s. That's when I grew up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love all the music that you grew up with too. But so it's good to have young people. And I know that you're part of a group that serves young people.
I am.
You should tell us about your experiences.
I'm a part of the local YPA, which stands for Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are young at heart, not young at age. It doesn't matter what age you are to be a part of our group. If you are sitting at our table, you are a part of our group and you have a vote.
So that means even you and I.
I would love to see both of you there. Actually, I saw Topher at a young person's meeting that one of my sponsees brought me to. I'm like, are you sure it's cool if I go to this? He's like, it's not about your age.
Was I doing balloon animals?
No.
Oh,
it was
just
a regular meeting.
Around and stuff like that.
That's where I saw you at the last convention.
With the roundup?
The last roundup. Yeah. Not this one, but the one before.
You know what they did do at this meeting, though, is they, when they did the chips, they would, what did
like,
they
just
do?
Just scream things at you?
Like, no, they would be like,
Oh, you went to, okay. So, YPA. And I know exactly what meeting you're talking about. The one that's like, oh, snap.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
So, I'm like, what are they doing?
That is a different meeting than what I'm referring to. But it is very similar in the idea that we are enthusiastic.
Yes.
That is where Young at Heart comes from. The name of it is that we have enthusiasm behind our sobriety. We aren't just sitting around just, you know, just letting life pass us by.
We are not a glum lot.
Not a glum lot.
Yes.
There we go, right? But we do... with YPA, a big part of it when it comes to the service aspect, I'm actually a chair for the local YPA. Mm-hmm. We're a service committee. So it's not like a normal go-to a meeting where, you know, we bring up a topic type deal.
Right.
More like a home group business meeting.
Yeah.
And we've been creating events for the area, you know, where it shows 4 or 5 hour events, which brings a new feeling to fellowshipping for the AA community.
What are some of the events? Can you give some examples?
Just recently,
candles?
The last one we did a candle workshop. The name of it was Faith Without Wicks is Dead.
Nice.
And where we pretty much had pizza. We had a 3-person speaker panel on the light in their sobriety. And we also did like a buffet line style of come in and you make your own candle that you can go home with, which was a lot of fun.
So it's an event that has speakers and fellowship, and you're actually
doing things with people in the fellowship, which is a lot different than the half an hour before and the half an hour after that most people are used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It adds enthusiasm and life to the unity.
Was everyone there young?
No. Not at all. There were some ladies that I'd want to say reaching older than my father, and my father's old enough to be my grandfather. So, you know, we're talking 80s, mid, late 80s here.
Brett's smirking because...
I am not.
I have 5 grandchildren.
Yeah.
I have 6 children and 5 I have a granddaughter that's older than my daughter. And, you know, I guess that's probably not too far from what you experienced growing up with older parents.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. My dad raised me the way his dad raised him, which was like... three generational gaps compared to what kids my age were being.
Yeah,
you know,
he was old school, like old school.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You guys don't know what old school is.
Yeah, no, don't want to have the house be a mess when he gets home. That's for sure.
So what are some of the other things besides, you mentioned Faith Without Wicks, what are some of the other things you guys are doing?
Yeah, we've done Thanksgiving event. We've done potlucks. We have in the plans a sober Super Bowl event that we're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. We're just coming in on Super Bowl Sunday, and we just give it that sober atmosphere where, you know, football fans can come and just enjoy football together in this event that they're so used to as alcoholics. Being shit-faced.
Yeah, being
fighting each other.
Like,
being
seriously. Come on.
What'd you say about my team?
Give an AA member a reason to start getting each other's face. Oh, it's going to be great. But yeah, doing things like that. There's a YPOC campouts where you go for the weekend, and it's an entire weekend of just AA.
I'm in.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's one of the best AA experiences I ever had was that. Imagine trying to do a speaker meeting where you're given 120 seconds to tell your story.
Oh, is that what you do?
Nice.
Oh,
yeah, like silly things like that around the campfire. It shows you, like, don't stick with the war stories. You know what I mean? Hey, I'm Topher. I'm an alcoholic. I did a lot of screwed up things, but this is how I got better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because you only get a minute to do it. More. Exactly.
Nice. And so when you guys meet as a committee, you come up with these ideas mm-hmm. and people are given service jobs,
yep.
little service commitments.
We have service commitments. We have positions that are filled, whether it be events chair, secretary, co-chair, orientation chair.
Now, can you tell the listeners how this helps in sobriety, how it's helped you in sobriety?
Well, not only did it give me the first real tangible commitment that was past just being a greeter or a coffee maker. It allowed me to be a part of something that was bigger than me and my sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I go to a meeting, someone's always going to be there to make the coffee because we're all a bunch of drunks and we want our coffee when we're at a meeting. Yeah. But, like, when have you ever gone to a Thanksgiving, like, dinner that was, like, a three-hour event that was, like, actual love?
And, you know,
love?
You talking about that, how you guys plan these things and get the involvement going on, that could be a lesson for some of our home groups. You know, to try and incorporate this stuff. And in fact, at the roundup this past weekend, they talked about doing such things and the fellowship and stuff like that. And that's what keeps it fresh. And we're all working towards something, enjoying something together.
Yeah, and you know, another thing too is people at meetings, they talk about the importance and the payoff of service work. But if you're in a group, besides being the group secretary or a greeter or a coffee maker, there's really only three spots open.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good for people to seek out organizations like...
And some home groups do
YPA.
That.
YPA.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, anywhere you go in AA, there's stuff to be done. I know when we have these yearly conventions, that breaks out into, like, all these different parts of it. Get speakers, set up hospitality. There's always stuff to do, but you really got to seek it out. Well, nobody's going to come up to you and go, you need to... go to this place and seek a commitment.
True.
But
YPA has the very similar thing when it comes to the yearly conventions that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, ESKIPA is the Empire State Convention of Young People's in AA.
So that's New York. New York State?
Yeah, all New York State. ESIPA is Eastern Coast. So it's the entire East Coast for YPA. There's one YPA that is bids and then is elected into being the ESIPA for that year. So they're the ones that would take over. So they would dissolve that YPA and they would host the convention for the East Coast YPA. There's Italipa, I believe, is one of them, which is a YPA in Italy.
So in Pennsylvania.
Pensipa.
Is it
pie? Pensipa.
I was thinking pie. Did
I mention that they have their own language too?
Oh yeah.
I'm just starting to understand now.
But here we go.
Yeah, I mean,
great,
you know,
organization.
It was good that the person that I was sponsoring that's involved in this kept telling me it's not just for young people.
Yeah, it's not.
It's called that, but it's not. It's. I mean, he goes, you might be the oldest, 64. He goes, you might be the oldest guy there, to be honest with you.
No, I know.
He goes, but you're not going to be It's not, you're not going to feel out of place, and nobody's going to make you feel out of place.
Yeah, yeah. No, not
There'll
at all.
There'll be people that are 40.
I 100% know people that are upwards of 50 and 60 that are members of WIPA.
Okay.
That have been members of WIPA for years. Like, people think that WIPA is a new thing. It's been around for decades.
Yeah, I only recently, I've been, you know, sober 34 years, and I only heard about it like a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to go.
You are both welcome.
Well, I went to that one meeting.
I can tell you what the meeting was.
It was like, different, you know. It was different.
No, you two are going to be sitting down with me at the table. Our next meeting. I think. What are you doing two Tuesdays?
We'll see.
There we go.
Two Tuesdays. I don't know.
You come. I'll just bring our mic. service commitment of just showing up to one of our meetings and see
what
it's
about.
Man,
they always get you, don't they?
Yeah, that's good though.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
You know, and
it's
then
fantastic.
It's just like AA. It's like they get you. Well, thank God.
We need to be got.
That's right. We do need to be got. So back to your story a little bit. How has your life changed since working the steps and doing service and, you know, all that? I mean, you mentioned before when you left college,
yeah,
you were fucking a mess.
I'm a different person.
Yeah.
I used to look in the mirror and think I was seeing the person that was being reflected back. Now I do. Hmm. Now I finally can be the son that yearns for his dad to be proud. And my dad has told me how proud he is of me, which that feeling brought tears to my eyes.
Mm.
I can be the father to my children that I always thought I was. Yeah. I get down and I have talks with my daughter. You know, like I don't yell anymore, to the best of my ability. but I mean, I'm still a drunk. Yeah. But like, you know,
I'm not super human. I mean,
we all have patience. But you know, I can communicate with her.
Yeah,
I can have I can be that spouse. I can be of service to not only my family, not only my significant other, not only AA members and the people around me, but I know that I'm a better person today.
In all your affairs.
In all of my affairs.
Yep.
And I'm constantly progressing to be a better person.
Do you ever lay some AA wisdom on your kids?
All the time.
I do too.
Yeah. I mean, this girl, she's an AA kid. She's been tagging along with me.
This
since
is your daughter?
Yes. Yep. She's been tagging along with me since I've been in the rooms. She's, you know, babysitters. They cost an arm and a leg.
Right.
And I mean, the other people see that there's a kid in the rooms, and they keep things very PG for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, she looks at me and she's like, "Dad, you need to do some breathing. Maybe go to a meeting. You're kind of angry today." Yeah. So
she's your sponsor.
she'll definitely look at me and be like, "Dad, you're having a rough one."
You know, I remember I was in the car, and I have three teenage daughters right now. And they were talking about who said what about who and who was fighting with who. And I, you know, and there's a lot of that in that age group. And I said, you know, before you say something to someone, mm-hmm. you know, there's three things you used to think. A, is it true? B, does it need to be said?
It doesn't need to be said by
and
you.
And C, does it need to be said by me?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, wow. that makes sense. I'm like, well, let me say it again. I said it again. I go, just remember that when it's in your mind, you want to blurt something out about somebody else that starts these little feuds. Because with girls, teenage girls, holy shit, it was like
my 9 and 6. Forget teenagers. The same thing.
Yeah.
And you hear all these things. You hear all these things in the room that are great wisdom truths. That I never heard anywhere else.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear them when I was
I
growing
use it
up.
In the general public, and you know what? That's worked really well because there's certain people that know exactly, pick up on it. They're
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I know you.
Oh, you know Bill? I know Bill too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 1,000%.
There's... And I never heard these things in a bar.
No.
When I was drinking in a bar, nobody ever came up to me and said, you know, you need a little more serenity in your life. Maybe you should think about cultivating your relationship with your higher power.
Are you on your pink cloud?
You look stressed. Here, have a shot.
That's right. I was just gonna say I was in a bar
You're not
one
drinking
time.
Enough.
Yeah,
I
right?
was in a bar one time and I was like kind of fucking whining about my life. And the bartender goes, "You're not drinking enough."
Yeah, right.
And he bought me a drink. I'm like, and then you know what I said? You know what? You're right.
That's how as a guy I would
Make
get you know I would get other people to drink for me. You know, get me drunk. You know, it's just
Ooh,
yeah. You go in good. As a sob story, and next thing you know, everyone else is trying to just get you to shut up.
Oh, okay, here, have another drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Son of a bitch. So, Yeah, lives change, and like you were just stating, we become better husbands, better fathers, better employees, just better all around. And
better.
You know, the great thing is that we feel it.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. They talk about the beauty that sobriety can bring you. I ended up going back to school. And I am right now about to be finishing my bachelor's on the president's list with almost a 4.0 GPA.
Hell yeah, man. Good job.
While being a full-time dad and an employee and everything else under the sun, being a member of AA. And it's all possible.
So you mean trying to keep up with all the different stories and lies gave you a little extra room in your brain?
Just a little bit. Yeah, right?
Yeah,
the cobweb? Yeah, I'm not trying to weed my way through the cobweb. Yeah. I feel
oh
that.
My God, when you first experienced that telling the truth thing.
Oh, man.
And it feels very foreign. And you're like, I'm really going to do this. I'm really just going to say it, and I'm going to take the consequences.
Yeah.
And then you say it, and the consequences are you said it.
That's about it.
And now, then you walk in like, God, that was easy.
Now lying gives me a stomachache. Yeah. Like, right. I'll finish with this last story. I remember I was driving up, and I was getting off an exit, and there was somebody on the side of the road asking for cash and stuff, and he sees me smoking a cigarette. This is before I quit smoking. And he says to me, hey, man, can I bum a cigarette off you? I'm like, and instinctively, because I didn't want to give him a cigarette, I said to him, oh, sorry, bro, this is my last one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just like a normal response as an alcoholic. And I had just bought a carton. The carton of cigarettes was in my glove box.
What a jerk.
I know, right? And I thought that I was so smooth. And I got sick telling this guy on the side of the road that I didn't have any cigarettes. So as a way to kind of like make amends to like not only that, but kind of like punish myself, I reached into my glove box, pull out a full pack of smokes, and I said, here, bro. Like, you know, I throw him a pack of smokes. You could have just given him one cigarette. Yep. But, you know, I made myself feel like crap for going back and acting upon my alcoholic tendencies.
Yeah, well, you know, when we're drinking and we do things that are dishonest or we lie or whatever, we don't feel it.
No.
We don't feel that toxicity. It exists, but we're numb. And then you take away the booze and we start doing the same actions. All of a sudden we feel it.
Yeah.
And it's so toxic. And, you know, I know with anger, I don't get angry a lot.
Yeah,
but when I do,
neither.
And I have sometimes gotten, you know, where you get that rage, I am hungover for days.
Oh.
I can't do it. I don't want to do it. The emotional hangover is too much for me.
I'm apologizing, like, during the rage.
I'm sorry,
I don't like doing this. I hate acting like this. I'm not this person anymore.
That's so good.
Wow.
So what do you tell, when you have a younger person come in?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, what do you guys usually talk about compared to the rooms? Is there a difference?
No, I don't think so. I think that there is the idea of trying to help them relate.
Yeah.
You know, if I see someone coming in, I understand what it's like to have you know, a group full of other guys that don't know what it means to stream video games on Twitch.
Well, right.
You know
what
I mean?
What I mean.
So like I'll go up and be like, so are you into gaming? You know, like, what's your favorite game? Oh, I love first-person shooters. You know, that's a lot of fun.
Getting on the level.
Yeah, you know, you got to make them realize that, hey, it's not just like a bunch of weirdos in these rooms.
Well, it is.
There is. But, you know, you try to make keep them long, round
yeah,
long
yeah,
enough.
Yeah.
Where
string
they,
them
so
along.
They, exactly.
Let them figure it out.
But, yeah, no, I want to make them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And then I want them to, like, recognize that, hey, like, I do have 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't think I would ever put together 24 hours.
And
I never was able to. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and just to breathe it out and to know that, like, hey, I'm here if you need me. Take down my number. Like, and the thing is, call me and make sure my number works right now.
Yeah.
Get some practice in, you know?
Oh, there it is. Yep.
Yeah. And it's so important to have young people like yourself be there to reach out, because when you come in the rooms initially, it's hard to reach out anyway. But if you come into a room of people that are your dad's age, and you're the kid, you probably, as soon as the meeting's over, you just want to get the hell out of there. So if there's somebody your age or close to your age that can walk up and say, hey, you know, my name's so-and-so, it makes a huge difference. And, you know, obviously, like any organization, youth is the lifeblood of, you know, what's going to keep things
exactly.
going.
Exactly. People tell me all the time, like, you are the future old-timer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, like, at this middle point where I can have appreciation for what the quote-unquote old-timers have paved the way for me to have,
sure. mm-hmm.
and then also know and understand what progress, not perfection, is. You know, because I'm a part of that progress, and the same way that AA is progress. And I think that there's a lot of people that are very stuck into what they believe AA should be, mm-hmm. and don't understand that progress is about that evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I can be a part of both worlds, and it's beautiful.
That's awesome.
Well, good job.
And we're so happy you came in to talk to us. Neither of us really knew you, but I feel like I know you now.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of this. Right? I've had 30 opportunities to get to know people. It's so good.
Yep. And so until next time on the Glum Lot Podcast, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
I'm Topher.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glum Lot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glum Lot community.